Yeah, hello everyone. It's Dr. Joanne Dahlketter with Performing Edge Coaching International. It is the new year. Happy New Year, everyone. It's January 9th, 2014. And I want to welcome you to the new year here. And we're going to be talking about goal setting and also the Olympics. You know, the Winter Olympics are coming up here. I just wanted to relay a story to you about how I got an athlete and how you can, you know, get top athletes to work with as well. I want to let you know in the next week or two, I'll just let you know about I'm going to start a level two of the Performing Edge Coach certification, because several of you have requested that, and another course, and so I'll let you know the details about that coming up, and so just send an email. And then our next call would be January the 23rd, so the level two would be, you know, an 8-week course just like the first one, just going into more depth with the business aspects, and also the second part of the Your Performing Edge book and how to coach people on those issues. So the main purpose for these calls, of course, is to answer your questions and connect with you. So you can always email me your questions or let me know or ask your questions on these calls. So, I wanted to tell you a story about an Olympic athlete I got and what that's like working toward these Winter Olympics. And does anyone have any pressing questions that you wanted to ask at first, or anything that you wanted to know from me?
I wanted to know, is it 1 o'clock on the 23rd, or are we going to stick to noon?
Let's
1
see.
O'clock Eastern time, sorry.
Yeah, let me ask you all here, I'd take a quick poll, which time do you prefer, or is there a preference or not?
I prefer the 12 o'clock Eastern, which is 9 your time.
Okay.
Yes, same here, if possible.
Okay, that's fine with me.
Oh, great.
Oh, good. And, Michelle prefers that. She said she could make it to our next call if she can't make it on this one because of her jet lag here. So, okay, that's great. We could just stick with 12 Eastern.
Okay.
Then for our next calls. And so that'll be great. And welcome back, everyone, to the new year here. And, New Year's a great time to set new goals and have new energy. So one thing I wanted to just relate to you first was how you can, it's always good to have, there's opportunities out there everywhere to get athletes as clients, whether they're, paid clients or if it's a really top athlete, an Olympian or a professional athletes, you might consider working with them a little bit for free or complimentary, so that you can, because they can help you with getting a good testimonial from them and building credibility as well. So I'll just give you an example of how I did that. I know the Winter Olympics are coming up here. I'd been working with another an aerial skier the last two Winter Olympics, but now she's retired, so I was just at my chiropractor's office because I have a foot issue, and it was actually at this. There's a clinic out here called Palmer Clinic. It's a college for chiropractors. Actually, I found I get even better treatment there than with the students, because just more thorough treatment, because they're being watched over by all these really great professors.
Yeah.
Even better than, if you go into a regular chiropractor's office, they see you for maybe 5 minutes or,
mm-hmm.
or 10 or 15 minutes, whereas here, I get seen for an hour and a half. And they do a real thorough job with your back and your foot and everything else. And so I was there, and I just mentioned to the student I was working with that I was, working, that the Olympics are coming up, and that I'm, in sports psychology and work with athletes, going toward the Olympics, and he said, "Oh, actually, there's a student here, one of my classmates." He said that's shooting for Sochi for the Olympics. she was in the past Olympics, and in Vancouver, she's an Olympian, and that she's going for this one. And I said, oh, great. I'd be willing to help her and, you know, help her with visualization and coaching, and I'd do it complimentary since she's, you know, going for the Olympics if you're, you know, if she might be interested. I said, maybe if you could connect me with her, it would be great if she'd be open to that. You know, just not real pushy, but just kind of putting my services out mm-hmm. there and making it complimentary, which, you know, is really good to do for the Olympics, I think. So he said, oh, yeah, that'd be great. Her name was Melissa. So I said, how do you connect with her? And he said, oh, on Facebook. So, you know, there's a way to connect with people on Facebook that, you know, just through messaging where you don't have to write. Because at first, you know, you wouldn't want to be writing on their timeline and that kind of thing because you want it to be confidential. But he said, I said, maybe if I send you a, you know, sometimes it's hard to connect with people because the athletes around the, you know, if they're, it's only a month before the Olympics, they're traveling all over the world, and mm-hmm. often they don't answer their, look at their email or that kind of thing. They don't have time to, you know, bring in someone new on their training team. They often have a coach and a physiotherapist and, you know, their whole sort of support team put together. But often they don't have somebody to work with the mental side of things. And as it's getting closer, you know, toward the Olympics, you know, they get really nervous. So I, so he agreed with that, and I'd given him my book and, you know, to build credibility also. And so he said, sure, I'll connect you with her. And so I sent him an email to forward to her. But then I, you know, sometimes that can work okay sometimes, but Facebook is actually even faster. I asked him if I could, because he's on Facebook. Everyone's on Facebook these days, of course. And so I said I could I request, you know, just send you a friend request. So I sent that to him, and then he accepted me as a friend, and that. And then he sent a little message to his classmate, Melissa, and she that way she could see that we're both friends, and that builds trust right away, much more so than, you know, she's wondering, oh, who's this other new person, you know. Yeah, you know, top athletes are maybe a little reluctant to, you know, get involved with somebody new right before the Olympics, of course, but since she knew Andrew, she's actually studying there at Palmer College as well to be a chiropractor. And he sent her a message and my message, and then I sent, even without being a friend with someone, you know, you can send, you can go to their Facebook page and then you can click on message and you can actually send them a message. So mm-hmm. I sent her a little introductory message there, and then I sent her a friend request. And with Facebook, it's just amazing how fat. You may have experienced this with other friends and all, but you know, with really important people or top athletes, it's, you know, it's harder to connect. But with Facebook, things can happen really quickly. So, you know, he had sent her a friend request, and then she I connected with Andrew, my chiropractor student, and then he connected with Melissa. And this all happened within a few minutes I sent the friend request, and then she, you know, read my email, my message, and then she sent back, there's that little chat box on the side there. I got a message that she had sent a message to me, and so that she said, yeah, I'd love to work with you. You know, this was like within 15 minutes of me mm-hmm. sending her a message. And all, it was just amazing. And then so I, you know, was able to chat with her right there in the little chat box and said, yeah, we could meet, how about tomorrow, you know, at 4 o'clock. We could do a chat by Skype because she was up in Whistler, you know, Suzanne, your territory.
Yeah.
Or Canada.
Sort of.
Yeah, right, well, way to the west. And Whistler's a beautiful area, you know. And so we, so she... said, sure, you know, tomorrow, or it was actually last Friday that we chatted, and she said, you know, we could do a session then, or do a, you know, chat. Really, not call. I would suggest not calling it a session, but a chat. You know, just to get to know each other. So, so we got on Skype, and then I said, "What's your Skype name?" So you want to ask them their Skype name and give them yours, so you can then connect on Skype. If they're in the U.S. here, of course, you could just do it by phone. But if it's international, then Skype is better because it's free, and people's cell phones often don't work outside the country if they're in another country, or it's more expensive, you know, so then they might not have that many minutes on their cell phone. But Skype, it makes it really easy to, you could do Google Hangouts, of course, as well. That's free, but a lot of people aren't hooked up with that yet. More and more people are, but it's newer. So, but whereas everyone seems to be hooked up with Skype pretty well, so that's a good way to start. So then we talked with Skype, and she does the skeleton. I don't know if you're familiar with that. The luge, you probably know, is where you go feet first down the slide.
Oh, yes.
And skeleton is where you go head first.
Oh my gosh.
Which is even more crazy, right? Why would you want to go head first?
Yeah.
Wow.
You know, that is crazy.
Yeah, and then they call it the skeleton.
Huh.
So you're going to end up being a skeleton.
Death wish.
It's kind of funny, but of course we don't talk about that part.
Right. So just a quick question, Joanne. What is your experience with actually marketing to their coaches? Like, I would assume that would be really positive with your website, you're so set up.
Yeah, marketing to their coach.
Just the coaches, period.
Yeah,
because there's such an intimate relationship between the athlete and the coach.
Yeah. I think it's can be a really good thing if you know a coach, or if you have any kind of insights to inroads to a high school coach or college coaches and it's just you want to ask around if possible.
Mm-hmm.
Some coaches are really open to sports psychology and mental
training.
But
what about the Olympian coaches? Is it more difficult to get through to them? Are they like agents? Oh, sorry, I'm going to just shut this off for the noise here.
Yeah, it's it varies. Yeah, some athletes have like one person that does everything. Yeah, their agent, their coach. It kind of
so it's probably
them.
Difficult to get through to the agent, is it?
Yeah, it depends on where you are, and if you happen to be like right there at a meet, like with Stacey Dragila when I was working with her at. All the top athletes came to Stanford University, the track here, and several years ago for a track meet, and so she was there. I got a press pass, which you can get just by, you know, kind of going online and asking about that, finding out how you get a press pass. And then I was able to go down on the track and afterward and interview the athletes, and I talked with, was able to talk with her and her agent there.
Mm-hmm.
And so, or sometimes athletes will say, you know, you say, well, can I connect up with you? And they'll say, oh, well, here, call this number. They'll give you the number of their agent.
Right.
Because the agent handles everything. And then you can call the agent and then ask them about working with the athlete. And they can, because they might feel like they need that, need the extra support at this time. So that can work really well, yeah.
But Dr. Joanne, I'm sorry, do you need special credentials or certificates or title or degree to work with these athletes? Because I was under the impression that a professional is required to have certain type of certifications or degrees, otherwise they wouldn't. But I'm glad to hear that you are, but I'm not quite clear.
Yeah, that's a good question, Alex. Thanks for asking, and I think... if you're, you know, some people, if you want to work with a team, like a whole Olympic team, like the swimming Olympic team or the, the U.S. ski team as a whole, then they would probably want someone that's, you know, has credentials like a PhD or a, you know, the Performing Edge Coach certification always helps. Any kind of certification helps you to get in the door. And it's more difficult to work with a, you know, a whole team, a U.S. Olympic team kind of thing. And those spots are sort of, you have to, it might take years to get into, you know, to be an official, you know, coach of a say, an Olympic team or a professional team. Or it's a little more, I don't want to discourage anyone, because there, it is mm-hmm. definitely possible. It's just that it takes more, you're dealing with more bureaucracies and
yeah.
you know, more people to get involved as a whole team.
And these coaches don't retire, correct?
And what, coaches don't retire?
They don't retire. They you know, they're with the team for a long time.
Yeah, that's true.
That's what I've noticed.
Yeah, but it's but what you can do, and I've seen, it's interesting, I've seen other sports psychologists and people working with teams, but they're not that, often they're not that good. They're kind of burnt out, and they're just mm-hmm. tired of doing the same thing, and, you know, they could use people like us much more. I wish that there was a way to, you know, you guys could get in and work with these teams. And I think it just depends on, you know, like the ballet. I mean, it depends on your ingenuity and your creativity. Like Amy, you know, you were able to get in with the Pennsylvania ballet. What are they called?
Yeah, the Pennsylvania Ballet.
Ballet, yeah.
Oh, wow, that's neat.
Working with them. And often you don't necessarily have to be called the, you know, the psychologist, the sports psychologist for the team or whatever. They just call you a consultant or a, whatever it is, and you can work, you know, first on a volunteer basis and then work yourself into a, you know, a paid position. But it definitely can work. Well, in terms of the Olympics, it's, you know, what I've done is just worked with individual, to answer your question, Alex, work with individual athletes. And so I don't call myself a, you know, a sports psychologist for the Olympic team or anything, but it's just working with an individual
sorry,
athlete.
Sorry to interrupt. I've got a Jack Russell Terrace dog here that just came in the door. How do I mute this so I don't disturb the group?
Oh, just press *6.
Yeah, she just came in the door. Now. Okay, but I'm here. Thank you.
And then if you want to talk again, just press *6.
Okay.
Again.
Thanks a lot.
Unmute. Okay, and... yeah, and so you can still work with individual Olympic athletes and then get their testimonial and say that you're working with Olympians and you know, use that for credibility. Oftentimes athletes, you know, in a lot of the sports, like you know, Melissa doing the skeleton, they don't have a lot of extra funding like, say, maybe the U.S. ski team does, or the snowboarders, you know, this ice skaters, or, you know, big high-profile sports, they have more funding and more coaches and that sort of thing. But say for people doing the luge or the skeleton, the cross-country skiing, they don't have, you know, a team, yeah, sports mental training coach or sports performance coach. So those athletes, you know, really could, you know, need someone to work with individually, and oftentimes athletes really like the fact that you're not part of a team. If you're not a team coach, then they feel like you're more of a confidant and you're more an outside person that they can talk to. Because sometimes I've heard this, sometimes there's issues with, you know, a sports psychology coach or consultant that, you know, is working with the whole team, but one person tells them something and then it gets around, somehow it gets out to other team members what they said. It's not, you know, completely confidential. So they, you know, sometimes athletes don't want to work with a centralized, you know, person. They'd rather work with an individual, you know, sports psychology coach that they feel like they can call, that's maybe not associated with the team, so they feel like it's more, you know, that they can say anything to you. And they, sometimes athletes, one of the main reasons they're coming to you is because they have an issue with their coach, their athletic coach, and they you know, aren't getting along, or the coach is favoring other athletes or something, there's political issues, and they just are having a real hard time with that, and they need someone to talk to that's outside that environment so that they feel like they can, you know, just know how to handle it and have the skills to, you know, communicate with the coach, that sort of thing.
Yeah,
so,
you just answered my question. That's a really good point. It's Sue, by the way. I'm back here. I think if you would do the marketing through the coach, then the individual might not have that trust.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I get it.
Yeah, exactly, because oftentimes the coach is, well, the coach is motivated by different things. The
right.
The coach is paid by the team to win, if it's a team sport or whatever
right.
it is that, you know, they're really motivated to get everything out of the athlete to you know, win or lose. Yeah, and if the team doesn't win, they lose their job.
Right. It's almost like an HR position. You know, the employee doesn't really trust HR, even though because they're somewhat biased. So that's what they think anyway, not that they all are.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay, that's interesting, the perception, right?
Yeah, so it's like if you can be an outside person that talks with them and
mm-hmm.
About that you're the one person, you can become the one person that's really interested in them as a whole person,
mm-hmm.
you know, and their, you know, how they're using, well, doing the sport, but it's not, they're not just a puppet in this whole thing, that they're a real, you know, that they can use sports to learn so much
mm-hmm.
about life and to mature and...
Mm-hmm.
And that if things aren't going well, you know, maybe at some point an athlete's burned out, they're considering leaving the sport or something, and they
mm-hmm.
they couldn't talk to a coach about that.
Right.
They could talk to you about it and sort of work those things through. And, or if they're not feeling well, sometimes they're injured a little bit, but they're afraid to tell their coach.
Right.
They could tell you, and you could help them with visualization and the right attitude to be able to heal quickly, or to manage an injury if let's say they've got the Olympics coming up and they've got to get through this thing, and then they can recover afterwards. Sometimes if it's a really important
mm-hmm.
event and it's an injury that they could kind of get through, you could give them techniques to be able to do that. So
that's good. You put it in the right perspective. I get it.
Yeah,
thank
you've
you.
Got a different interest, I think. You know, you're
mm-hmm.
at the interest of the athlete and the athlete's well-being.
Exactly.
And how they survive as a person for the rest of, not just through this sport, but through
right.
their lives.
Their whole personal development.
Yeah, personal
mm-hmm.
development, exactly. Whereas
mm-hmm.
a coach is more interested in, let's win this thing, or let's get the points, you know, train. Often they're overtrained and
mm-hmm.
Getting injured. Half the team's injured because the coach doesn't give them enough time to rest. So
mm-hmm.
in some ways you can be their advocate you know, if you're an outsider kind of thing. And if you're in this, some situations like this, you're working with them by phone or Skype, the
mm-hmm.
coach doesn't have to know that, you know, that the athlete's working with a sports psychology coach here, performing edge coach. You can keep that all confidential, and
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
which actually, in some ways, is better.
Better, yes.
Yeah, it's less headaches for you because you don't have to deal with politics. And
yeah.
All that other stuff.
But Dr. Joanne, sorry. So it seems like reaching out to the athlete instead of going through the coach may be more effective.
Yeah.
Right. But how do you then balance? But some coaches are somewhat, I mean, they're not very self-assured of themselves. That's one way of saying it. And they may feel threatened by having somebody else coming in and playing around with my play or my athlete.
Right.
So how
mm-hmm.
how do you balance that as a weak ego? I mean the coach's ego, of course, when you really have a nice, or try to build a nice relationship with the athlete, find yourself in the middle. So how do you maneuver that situation?
Yeah, that's a good question, Alex. Yeah, you all have such great questions. It's wonderful. I think it depends on the situation and how close you are to the yeah, to the athlete or to the situation there. In this case, with Melissa, you know, I'm just working with her as a outside person, just like she was, like if she was going to go, you know, to get her hair done or something, you know, someplace else, she wouldn't have to tell the coach about that. I'm sort of completely separate from the coach, so he doesn't even, if there is, the coach doesn't have to know or doesn't have to approve of me, because the athlete's just, you know, saying, you know, it's okay that I'm choosing to work with you, and it's, you know, separate kind of thing, so you don't have to deal with the coach at all. Yeah, but in other situations, yeah, if the coach knows about you, then, I mean, it just depends on the, I guess one thing, it depends on the age of the athlete. In this case, Melissa is like 30 years old, and so she's, you know, she's not on a high school team or something, so she can, you know, make her own decisions independently of the coach, and he's not, doesn't have a real tight, you know, tight rein over her, over those decisions. She can just kind of decide what she does outside of that. And a lot of athletes are like that. Even I noticed with high school athletes, you know, parents will call me and they want, you know, they want me to work with them outside of the, or just because they're having maybe a problem with their coach or something. And so I work with them individually. And so the coach doesn't have to know about that or approve of it, because they're, you know, it's a free country,
right?
And they can do whatever they want. If you were, you know, working in a closer kind of situation, like I think Alex, you're asking about, where, you know, where you're there, you know, where the coach knows that you're working with them too, then. I would try to, if you can, you know, make friends with the coach. It's always better to do that without breaking confidentiality of exactly all the things that you're talking about, but just saying, you know, kind of just talking about what the kinds of things that you do, and getting to know the coach and what their style of coaching is, and then trying to, you know, blend in with what they are doing, or, you know, phrase it as
that's a good point.
Yeah, that you're enhancing what they're doing and helping, you know, if they want the team to win, then, you know, try to speak their language as much as you can and say, I want happier athletes usually are the ones that win as well and that perform better. So, you know, we're trying to do everything to help, you know, say, coach, well, I want to help you be able to meet your goals here by giving the athletes even more skills.
Yes, and if I can just interject, there's where the certification, I think, comes in handy, because even though you have a PhD in whatever, social science, psych, at least it's specific to, you know, personal development and performance, and I think the coach would probably feel a little bit better about that.
Yeah.
Specific, yeah. Yeah,
yeah, exactly.
I would probably play that card for sure.
Right. Play the certification card.
Oh, yes. Well, they need to know, right? They might think, what do you have, a PhD in basket weaving or what, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, you got a PhD, but what is it in?
Right.
Yeah.
But even if it's psychology, does it mean, like, you're right. I know a lot of psychologists as well, and they don't have any experience with, you know, sports psychology or mindfulness or any of it. They might have cognitive behavioral stuff, but nothing to do with more personal development.
Yeah, and most of the psychologists are probably not athletes themselves,
don't have
experience with those kind of activities, so they don't know. So if you are an athlete yourself at any level, I know all of you now probably are doing some activity, and say, you know, make sure they know that you're involved in sports too, so you understand what it's like to sweat and be out there working hard. Yeah, that can help, and then just if you can try to find out from the coach what their philosophy is and what their goals are, and then try to speak their language as much as possible help.
And are there times, Dr. Joanne, that you actually meet with the coach and the client, if the client, you know, is on board with that, if you feel it would be effective?
Let's see. I'm trying to think if I've done that. Various times, like I mentioned a few months ago. It was back in July.
Mm-hmm.
This was when it was on one of our calls here, but a coach actually called. This is a really good situation where a coach called me from Stanford, and
mm-hmm.
that's when Stanford was hosting the Bank of the West women's tennis tournament there.
Mm.
And so it was all the top tennis players in the world were right there. Stanford is only 10 minutes away from me.
Mm-hmm.
And I really wanted to be involved in the tennis tournament there in some way, but it's really hard to get in because it's like the Olympics of tennis. It's the biggest women's only tennis tournament in the world. And but this coach called me and said he had an athlete that's competing in the Bank of the West. He just looked up online and, you know, what coaches in your area. That's why it's really important
mm-hmm.
on your website and everywhere to put, like sports psychology or performance coaching or performing
mm-hmm.
as coach in Toronto or, you know, in New York, in Pennsylvania, like for you, Amy and Alex in New York, whatever city you're in, try to pinpoint say the city and the state or the Bay the area. Like I'm in the Bay Area, put that in all your like your blog posts and your on Facebook and
mm-hmm.
everywhere, so people know where you are. That way, they'll look that up. Online, they'll say.
So, another quick question: are you in the U.S.? Can you use the word psychologist or psychology? If you're not registered, like
yeah,
psychology,
can't. No.
I'm a I happen to be a licensed psychologist.
That's right. So she can. Yeah.
So I can.
Yeah, you can. But let's say if you're not a licensed, can you still use the word sports psychology, not psychologist?
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah.
I think you can do like sports psychology coaching.
Okay.
Yeah.
In Canada, I think we can't even use the word psychology anywhere.
Huh. It depends on the country. So,
okay.
Yeah, we check on the standards of your country. Here, it's a little bit looser.
Mm-hmm.
I think sports psychology isn't really regulated. But they, from what I understand, yeah, you shouldn't use the word psychologist unless you're a licensed clinical psychologist. But psychology is okay. Like, you said, Amy, sports psychology coaching is fine. But to finish my answer to your question, Sue, about working,
mm-hmm.
meeting with a coach, this coach asked me to actually, can you come over could we meet with you? He said, you know, with my athlete, because she really needs help with the focus and being able to handle the pressure situations
mm-hmm.
here for the coming up to this tournament. And I said, sure. And they were going to come to my office, but then they said they didn't have time. And I said,
mm-hmm.
well, could I meet with you? And so and they said, yeah, well, actually, the client has a break right at noontime. We're going to go over to this cafe outside. Why don't you meet us there? So
mm-hmm.
I said, okay. And so I just went there. And so we actually had I met with the coach and the athlete,
mm-hmm.
Right outside in a, cafe.
Mm-hmm.
Outside, and so the coach was able to tell me, what he saw as the issues, and
mm-hmm.
the athlete. In this case, the coach and the athlete worked really well together, and they were fine. And the coach was really into sports psychology and wanted
mm-hmm.
that kind of help. So yeah, it was great. I met with them for 2 hours and able to get the athlete's impressions and the coach's outlook, and then we could kind of formulate a plan together, the
mm-hmm.
three of us right there, in face to face is the best possible way,
mm-hmm.
but often that isn't as possible. Sometimes at a track meet, the same kind of thing. If everybody's outside, you can meet with the athlete there, and if the athlete wants, they can say introduce you to the coach and
mm-hmm.
that kind of thing. And so if there's a good relationship there, that works well. And at the Olympics, actually, at the Olympic in Greece, when I was
mm-hmm.
there in Athens, at the Olympics, the training, but right the week before the Athens Olympics in 2004, Stacy Jagila worked with her, and I got a credential to get into the Olympic Training Center. Just applied through, even though I wasn't a official coach for the Olympics or anything, but I was working with her as an individual. Then I was able to just get a credential to get into the Olympic Training Center, and then she said, and Stacy said, okay, I'm meeting with my coach this morning, to do a workout. Maybe you can watch us and see what kinds of things I need to work on. And so I sat there just with the athlete, with her, watching her do her pole vault workout. Mm-hmm. And the coach was, I was on one side of the runway and the coach was on the other, so I could hear what he was saying to her, hear the cues that the coach was giving to the athlete. And I was writing this down, filling out a whole pages of notes of what he was saying to her, what he needed to remember. And then afterward, and then writing, also videoing some stuff and so videoing her workout. And then afterwards, we talked right after, and she said, okay, I need to work on this. And
interesting, yeah.
And so we could then go over, his cues and mm-hmm. and my impression, and then do a visualization, a coaching session visualization. I just met with her privately to help her to integrate all that she was learning from her coach. Mm-hmm. So
that's
really
good.
Good situation too. I mean, and she was, it went right to the sport. Usually athletes in the Olympics, they right after they do a workout beforehand, they go to the sports medicine center to mm-hmm. rehab right afterwards. So she was actually, Stacey was standing in a garbage can filled with ice.
Oh.
Because she was icing her legs and her hips and all. And so this thing is, that was her high-tech rehab, right?
Wow.
So I'm talking with her while she's standing in a garbage can. It's kind of hilarious.
She's chilling.
We were talking trash, right?
Yeah, she was just chilling.
Yeah. But, yeah, that's a really good question.
Okay. And I would assume you'd get a lot of word of mouth from other athletes.
Like, yeah,
you do
exactly.
a good job with them and, you work it through.
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. That sort of thing happens. It sort of catches on like, like wildfire, they say, like that song that's out now, where you, one athlete, like I was working with a high school girl here for volleyball, and she was having a lot of problems with her coach, and coached her through how to talk with her coach, and we actually wrote out the script because she wasn't very assertive, and so we talked about what she wanted to say, the unedited version first mm-hmm. of all the things she wanted to express, and then we said, okay, now let's create the edited version
mm-hmm.
that he can hear. And then I had her practice with me, actually, role play, and then we wrote it out so she could practice it with her in front of a mirror and with her friends, and then she went back and was able to talk with her coach beforehand because the coach was favoring other athletes, and when in fact her stats were showing she was, she should be out there playing, and it was coming up the biggest championship, the championships, national championships for volleyball were coming up that weekend, where all the coaches were going to be there, all the scouts from mm-hmm. all the different schools, offering scholarships. Oh my gosh! And so this could be worth like $250,000.
Wow!
Scholarships, scholarship funding for the next 4 years for her college. So, I mean, it was really critical that she be able to play in the national championship. So I helped her to have that conversation with her coach, so that she could show that, hey, I'm working really hard here, and my stats are higher mm-hmm. than ever, and I'd like to have some play time in this in national championships. And she was mm-hmm. able to express that without being, so the coach wouldn't get defensive and without being too aggressive. And so feeding into the coach's goals, which are the coach is saying, we want to win this thing, and I can help us win. So if you can feed into what they want, and that's really key. And then so I did that with that one volleyball player, and then just a couple days ago I got another call. Now she's at a university, and so I got a call from her teammate saying, oh, yeah, I talked with, you know, my other client, we'll call her Mary, and my roommate is Mary, and I'm at school, and she says has great things to say about you, and, yeah, I'm having problems with my coach at the university with volleyball. They were on the same volleyball team there. So it ended up, you know, being able to work with another volleyball player then. He has the same issues of they both hate their coach.
That's good. So the stigma is not like psychotherapy, I would think, right? It's much more positive. There's no stigma.
Yeah, I think there's not. I mean, it's less now than ever than before. It's,
right.
Yeah.
Because not a lot of people want to talk about going for psychotherapy. They might if they're pretty positive, but... But I guess sports psychology is a little bit different. Even most coaching is a little bit different. It's like more personal development, so they're more apt to share, correct? Just,
Yeah, exactly. People are just, it's more about, personal development, performance issues, and being able to, get psyched up, get ready to play, and all of that. Yeah.
Okay,
so,
that's great.
Yeah, oh, Alex, so did I answer your question about...
Thank you, yeah.
Along the way, yeah. Or Amy, did you have questions too? Are you still there?
Yep, I'm here. I'm listening.
Oh, okay. If you have any questions, you can jump in.
Okay.
I was going to mention that with this athlete, then we just, back to Melissa, who's doing the skeleton, we... he just quickly connected on Facebook and then said, well, let's do a Skype call. And then we did that last Friday. She was doing two races up in Whistler that weekend. I mean, the next day she's doing these two races. And she has not yet been named to the Olympic team. So but they're going to name the Olympic team in about a week from now. So, and she's trained in the U.S. here, but she's from Australia. And so she's competing for the Australia team, even though she's here in the U.S. She's actually a student at this chiropractic clinic where I met her teammate or her classmate, this guy. So when we're on the phone, one thing I wanted to tell you, important tip when working with top athletes is to try to. They don't have a lot of time there, and at first they kind of really want to get to the point. They want you to get to the point to be able to help them. So it's good if you can do your homework ahead of time. And so I went and Googled her name and came up with her Facebook page, and then her I said put in her name and then Olympian skeleton. And then saw that she was 12th. She was 12th in the last Olympics in Vancouver, and saw her best finishes and all. And I tried to, so you want to find out their statistics and what their accomplishments, so that you can be up on that and congratulate them on that. You don't have to, so you're not going in totally cold.
You can jump right in, right?
What's that?
You can just jump right in, like be on their page right away.
Yeah. See, I know you've done this, and I know you're going for the Olympics here. Yeah, and a little bit about the sport, if you're not familiar with that particular sport, like how many of us know about the skeleton?
Mm-hmm.
if you had to answer a test on the skeleton, it's like, I have no clue. Because I didn't know about. I mean, I worked with this guy, with Ruben, another athlete for the last Olympics, Ruben Gonzalez. He was at the Vancouver Olympics, and he became the first person ever to compete in four Olympic Games, all each in a different decade. So amazing! He's a four-time Olympian. So I knew a bit about the luge there, but he didn't tell me a lot of the details. Whereas I wanted to know more about that. So, you can go on YouTube, of course, and watch, just Google, skeleton like I did and watch some of the, and then listen to the commentators. That's where you learn a lot about the sport, is the actual, NBC commentators or whoever's commentating will tell you, they're taking this curve, too high, or they're, she's getting a good good sprint at the start,
mm-hmm.
and that kind of thing. And so you get the language, get familiar with the
mm-hmm.
language that they're using, and the mistakes to avoid, and the things they need to focus on. And if it's a famous athlete or somebody that might have a video that you can see their videos of them performing on YouTube, or any videos that are online. Oftentimes, there's something on there. You can, if you watch their video, that's really good too. You can say,
mm-hmm.
"Oh yeah, I watched your video at blah 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 in this competition, and saw that you did really well here, or they said really good things about you." And you know, if you can bring that in, then that's good. They know, "Oh, okay, this person knows about me already. I don't have to start from scratch."
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And then, another tip that I have is to not. You don't want to go, you know, a normal person that's just, you know, at a, where you have more time with, you could start with more of a full assessment and find out their history and what's going, you know, various things about their life, little snapshots of each part. But in this case, you know, you want to get right to the issue. It's kind of like
mm-hmm.
going in for surgery or something. You know,
yeah.
The surgeon.
Yeah,
you know, you want them to just,
they're antsy. They're not going to be wanting to give you a full assessment at that point.
Yeah, they want to know, okay, well, how are you going to help me in this race tomorrow?
They can't focus at that point.
Yeah, so I just went right to that. I said, okay, so I know, because I looked at her Facebook page, and it's she was writing, oftentimes if they have a blog or Facebook page, they'll be writing about what race is coming up or something.
Mm-hmm.
So if you can say, okay, I know you're in Whistler and you've got this race tomorrow, so tell me about the course, you know, so let's get right into it kind of
mm-hmm.
thing. And so, or what kinds of things are you, what do you need to work on?
Mm-hmm.
And so she would tell me about that. And maybe you might not know all the technical terms that they're talking about or the specifics of how to make a turn. We all don't know how to do a turn in the skeleton, but you can write those terms down anyway and use them in a visualization.
Mm-hmm.
For example, she said, I asked her, what do you need to focus on right at the beginning of the race? And she said, I get to the starting line, I put the sled down, I get in position, I build my cadence. And then, so at first it's like, you know, you're not sledding at first, you're sprinting. It's actually
mm-hmm.
kind of like a sprint and then a slide. And so she's, you know, because you're pushing the sled to get going. So she says, I build my cadence, I'm doing my first two steps, not too fast, and I get it moving. I low heel recovery, keep my foot close to the ice. I'm working on my turnover, thinking leg speed. I keep my feet close to the sled, increasing my cadence. I'm trying to get the most out of each step. I'm working on dorsiflexion. You know, I had no idea what dorsiflexion is, but I'm writing it down anyway, right?
Mm-hmm. Then you Google it later.
Yeah, Google it later, exactly.
Mm-hmm.
So if I was to ask her, what's dorsiflexion, she would
mm-hmm.
probably go, oh, God, I don't want to take the time to explain this now.
Mm-hmm.
So you don't want to ask about that. Just write it down and figure it out later.
Mm-hmm.
Ask your other skeleton friends, yeah, right?
Right.
How many
skeleton friends
do you have? But you know, you can find it out on Google it, and then she says that ankle recovery. I want to get the most power out of each step. I'm getting into the sled. If the groove is pulling one way, then I need to figure out which way to slide to one side or the other. I'm awareness of my body position. I'm thinking about the sled angle into each curve, the entrance position, each drive. I've got to think about the intensity of the drive, the length of the drive. I need a good position of my sled. And, all this stuff. So I'm an expert on the skeleton, right? And all of you are.
You want to try it yourself.
Yeah, yeah. So your homework this week, let's all do the skeleton.
You can do it here in Toronto.
Yeah. So, but she's, that's a really good, if an athlete can get those kinds of details
mm-hmm.
to you. I told her, the more detail you can tell me, then the more I can help you. You know, so
mm-hmm.
so you want to tell them say even if I don't understand all the terms specifically, it's okay. Just let me know what you're thinking, and so I can put them into a visualization for you. And so there, so she goes through all that, and she taught. And then the next, so we did a visualization for that, and I emailed it to her. Sent it actually on Facebook. You know, there in your little chat, you can actually put an attachment. You click on the little. There's a little gear sign there, a little symbol. It looks like a gear. You click on that, and it says Add Files, and then you can go to your computer and click on your MP3 file and attach it right there. Which is really cool for Facebook, so you don't even have to deal with email. You can put it right there in Facebook. So we have this little chat going, which is so cool. It makes it so much easier, you know, so you don't have to think about it. Email is good if that's all that you have, but Facebook, you can sort of chat back and forth, and you have this running chat going, and it's just a lot easier to communicate on a quick kind of basis like that. So, so she played that, and then she worked on the MP3. I made her a couple of them. I made her a visualization MP3 for her, that best peak performance, which was back when she was a junior, she won the junior world championship. And so, I made her one for that, and then I made her a second MP3 for that upcoming race. So you want to, that's a good thing to do for a first visit. You can, if you have time, to actually make two visualizations, one for their best peak performance in the past, and then one for their next upcoming event. And then she listened to it that night, and then she did her race the next day, it was actually Sunday and Monday, and then I read on her Facebook page, she got fourth overall and had a personal best.
Wow.
Personal best.
Oh, that's great.
Start time, yeah.
And how long was that first visit? Would it
how
be two
long,
hours or an hour?
We actually talked for an hour and a half.
Yeah, because I was going to say it would take a while to get all that information and script it out.
Yeah, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
It was great. So, if you have somebody, you know, at first, just you can tell they're kind of shorter. Usually, athlete will have shorter sentences and yes, no answers. And okay, well, at first they're kind of checking you out, and you want to, you know, just talk. And sometimes, if you can tell a story about your own athletic things that you've done or other athletes you work with, that can help. To kind of break the ice and open things up, and or a little bit of humor is always good too.
Yeah.
And she was talking about, for instance, the start house, they call it, which is at the top of the run. And I thought she said, with her accent, I thought she said hot house, which is kind of like what it is a hot house. she sort of started to open up about that, you know, right, what happens right beforehand. It's like most athletes are in a ready room or a house where all the athletes are there and they're all checking each other out. And is everybody talking? Or she said, sometimes they're talking, sometimes it's dead silence.
Silence
you can cut with a knife. and sometimes it's like nobody wants to talk because they don't want anybody else to hear what they're thinking. And and so there's like this kind of a lot of stuff going on in the start house where you can end up psyching each other out, you know.
Yeah.
Right beforehand. And so we were trying to figure out strategies for that beforehand. And I was saying, if you have anybody there that you know, if you can lighten up and tell a joke or do something funny to kind of take the pressure off, that can really help. So
would that be, what would be the last 5-10 minutes of closure with the client? What would be your goals?
With them? I would say in the last 5 or 10 minutes with a client, I would, we'll finish up with a visualization. I do that with them there, the exercise, and then debrief afterward and say, so how was that for you? Could you see yourself there on the run? And what was your anchor, if they used a success anchor, you know, a color, a shape, a word, or a gesture to remember the experience by? What was the anchor that you had, so you get that down? And she said for her it was banging the sled at the bottom. She's like high-fiving the sled. if she's feeling good. So, yeah.
So it would be the visualization. That would be the last.
Yeah, the and
that makes sense.
After that. And then just kind of coming up with an exercise or something to do that week, game plan of, here, let's do this exercise, a visualization, or instructions about how to use that.
Right.
Do I play this? I'd say, well, put it on your iPod and play it at night right before you go to sleep, and then the next day before your training and right before your competition if you can.
Right, okay.
And write down your thoughts and journal, that kind of thing. So, yeah, so that was an example I just wanted to give you of that visualization and
that was helpful.
Yeah, and then the next time we met last night again, and then now she's in Park City, you know, where we had the Olympics, of course, in Utah back in 2012. It's still the Olympic Training Center there.
Mm-hmm.
She's got two races coming up this weekend, so now we did another visualization. This time she got into more specifics. Oftentimes with the next time you work with someone, they'll be even more specific about the curve. So she got a chance to do the practice run, and she does 14 curves, and she took me through every curve. You know, as they're turning, okay, here's, curve four.
Were you nauseous?
So let go into the curve and then peak, releasing, take the peak off the curve.
Oh.
I don't know what that means, take the peak off the curve, but I wrote it down. and I used that in the visualization. And she said, and then just into curve five, just float underweight. And I said, well, I did ask her, what's underweight? She said, that's a steering technique.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, she doesn't need to describe what it is, but just use the word underweight, or unweight, that's it, unweight.
Sounds like scuba diving.
Example of that, yeah. Do you guys, what's your response to that, or any questions about that? Amy or Alex, you guys too?
I'm here.
I didn't want to just let you know that you guys are. Amy? Are you? Do you have any updates on the stuff you're working on too? I just wanted to check in with you too.
Yeah, I have an interesting meeting next week at the Curtis Institute of Music, which is a really prestigious music school in Philadelphia, and they take the top candidates from all over the world, and I just started sending emails out. I'm really enjoying working with performing artists, and because I say I work with the Pennsylvania Ballet, and now I have a professional opera singer, I connected with this woman there, and she was really interested in hearing about what I'm doing with all these different programs, so she is having me come in and meet with her next week, which is really cool. Yeah, that could be
Congrats.
Really...
Congrats, that's fabulous.
Yeah,
that's
a really, really high-caliber music school. And then I went and met with someone who has an acting school, and he wants me to do some workshops with his acting classes. So I'm doing that. And then as far as the athletics, I've been really bugging this lacrosse coach at Haverford College for months and months. I just won't stop emailing her. And finally, we have a date on the calendar for a workshop there. She's going to pay me to come in and do a workshop for her varsity team at Haverford College, which I'm really excited about because that's a great school.
Oh, wow. Good
job. That's super. Very nice.
So I'm kind of, doing the performing arts thing, and then I'm really trying to get more involved. Now that I have this workshop with her, I'm going to email the other coaches at Haverford and tell them what I'm doing and start emailing some of the other schools.
Yeah,
so,
that's fantastic. So that's a good technique. You don't have to wait until you give the workshop to tell others.
Yeah, I think it's the perfect time now since that's a prestigious school. So to be saying that I'm doing that, and then the same thing for the ballet. It's like what you were talking about, saying you work with Olympians. If you say that, other people are going to be interested to say the Pennsylvania Ballet. It sounds prestigious, so people like that, so they start listening.
Yeah, gives a lot of prestige.
But then the thing that I went to you for the coaching sessions, the thing with the insurance company, nothing's going on with that.
Okay.
So she's, I don't know, she just sort of lost steam. I've sent 2 emails that she hasn't really responded back. So I guess she's not interested.
At least you got, if you can save all that, your emails and information from there, and I mean, there's tons of insurance companies out there, of course, insurance companies definitely have funding and have most of them have lots of money, so you could, use that same strategy to approach them.
Yeah, it's true. I could definitely take it elsewhere. She was a little disappointed with some response that she got from this incentive that they sent out to the employees to cut the cost of the medical insurance. They had a very low turnout, so I think she was a little discouraged by the low participation. So that's why I was like, well, this, you need to clearly offer something else. So I don't know. Maybe she will get back to me. I'm not sure.
Yeah.
But
so
I didn't want to sit around waiting for that. So there are plenty of other things to do.
Right. Yeah, you give it a really good shot there. And it was something where you separate out things you can control from those you can't. And
right. Yep, exactly. Especially with a big company like that. It's everything takes forever. And it's
She was basing it on something else that went on beforehand that had nothing to do with you.
Right.
Saying low turnout for something else doesn't mean they'd have a low turnout for you. But at least you got the strategy down and the language. So if another opportunity comes up.
Right, yeah, it's very useful information to use some. I can take it somewhere else.
Yeah, or use that same email type thing and just customize it for music or for ballet or acting. Yeah, anything else, too. So that's great. And one thing you can do is if you have this workshop coming up at Haverford College, it just depends on their openness, but sometimes you could, let's say you had a coach from another, maybe another non-competing college or another play or a opera, something else that's non-competing with them, if you could, sometimes you can invite them, another meeting planner, to come hear you speak at, say, the Haverford College. You know,
mm-hmm.
If you were there, that's the way I got a really good, a huge speaking gig was, Texas was to, I was speaking at a nutrition company, and then there was this other hotel and spa that was interested in me speaking, and the general manager of that was interested in me, and I said, can you come hear me speak at this other thing there in town, another talk, and he came, and then he was really impressed, and there's no better way to get another speaking gig is for them to come hear you speak and live, you know.
Yeah, that's a good idea. Really good idea.
You can have others come there, yeah, too. And if there's any way you can videotape it, and just, for yourself, in the back, just bring your own video camera. It doesn't have to be real professional or anything, but just have a friend video it, bring a little tripod, or if they can just hold a video camera in the back of the room or something so that you have that, and so just number one for your own feedback, so you can listen to it afterward and see how you did and be able to improve upon it. And then also, if you can, if it turns out to be a good video, then you could use that for another. You could offer it to the college there as a either as a bonus or as a paid thing that they pay extra for, or all kinds of things you could do with that. And you can also put it on, put a section of it on your website as a example of your speaking, and say, here I spoke at Haverford College here, and maybe not put the whole thing on, but just a portion, a part of it or something, so it shows
mm-hmm.
you speaking, so that's a really good, people, meeting planners love to actually see you in action speaking. Yeah.
Yeah, that's a good idea.
So that would be great, yeah. Congratulations! I'm so excited. Wow, music and artists and opera.
Yeah, I'm. You know what? It was funny because I was on a website, the Applied Sports Psychology website, and it listed one of the coaches from Performing Edge, Kate Hayes.
Uh-huh.
Okay, it sounds like she's doing some work with performers.
Huh. Yeah, maybe. I think she's up in Canada somewhere, maybe. I'm not sure. But
yeah, she sounds familiar.
I saw her name on there.
Yeah.
It said a Performing Edge coach, and I thought, ha, okay.
Oh, I think she has the website, The Performing Edge, and mine is Your Performing Edge.
Oh, so she's not one of your coaches?
No.
Oh, I was thinking she was one of your coaches.
Yeah, she's just another.
Okay.
She's not.
She's not part of the. Okay.
Yeah, it just so happens that.
Because I was going to ask you about her, but that's
she's in
okay.
Toronto. I just Googled it.
Oh yeah, Toronto. Okay, yeah.
She's called a Performing Edge. Isn't that something?
That
yeah.
is. Isn't that funny?
Yeah.
Okay.
Wow.
Because I was going to reach out to her, but I still could.
Yeah, but it's different. It's not part of this. She just took, has a similar name as your Performing Edge. But she's just, I think she's more academic and, maybe teaches somewhere. I'm not sure. But, I think I met her once at a conference a long time ago.
She's a PhD psychologist. She's a psychologist.
Yeah, right.
Okay.
I don't know too much about her. But anyway.
Can I ask one more question? I have an idea that I was thinking of approaching one of two prominent surgeons in Philadelphia, and one is called the Rothman Institute, and it's a huge orthopedic institute, and they just opened a trauma center for people that have just hurt themselves, and they take care of them immediately because otherwise it takes a long time to get an appointment. And I know the head of the spine division there, and I was thinking of approaching them as far as offering some type of coaching for people dealing with their injuries.
Yeah.
For sure.
Sounds great.
I think that could be a really good thing.
I worked with Rothman in Toronto.
Oh, you did?
Yes. And, I mean, I'm burnt out dealing with rehabilitation. That's why I wouldn't go there. But for sure, they do a lot of mindfulness and they,
mm-hmm.
you know, relaxation and pain management, strategies and... So that would be excellent if that's what you're interested in.
Yeah, if you've got an in and you know someone, that would be great. And a lot of times we could work with the patients and also with the surgeons if they're open to it. I actually worked with an orthopedic surgeon a while back that just Googled me and wanted to Google sports psychology and found me in the Bay Area, wanted to work with me for peak performance in the operating room.
Mm.
So, yeah, how to actually have the right mindset to do the surgery and be able to handle all the politics that go on within the surgery room. Pretty amazing. But in addition, most doctors don't deal with that, don't address that at all, so all the mental stuff that goes on with recovering from illness. And if you go back in the replays of our Performing Edge coaching in September of, remember I had that I broke my hip and had a bicycle accident 2 years ago and broke my hip and was in the hospital and then created a whole program for myself to recover from the hip injury. And that's, if you go back to, it would be 2013, so it's 2011, September, that go to that replay. I talk about that there. And how I recovered from that. And then there's also a document there. Let me write that down here. I can just resend that to everyone here about healing. Well, the recovering from surgery or recovering from injury, and make sure that I put that in the members area here from surgery. So, you know, just all kind of a checklist of things to do. But you could develop, yeah, like you say, Amy, a whole program about that.
Yeah, I actually have an appointment with the head of sports medicine at Pennsylvania Hospital in a week because he just operated on my husband.
Oh.
And so I was thinking while I'm there, that could be a good opportunity to kind of tell him what I'm doing.
Yeah. Oh,
yeah,
great.
Good stuff.
The
you're going to be busy.
Well, I'm throwing a lot of balls up in the air and, you know, just sort of see what happens.
Yeah, it's, you're just so good at seizing the opportunities that are out there. And when your doctor, yeah, I mean, like you say, when he was operating on your husband, so you got a perfect in. Yeah, what did your husband have?
He had a torn meniscus.
Oh, okay. So you could use him as a guinea pig, right, for your program.
Yes, I could.
That's great. Wonderful.
And you don't have to tell people it's your husband in terms of, using techniques or whatever. but also that document might, yeah, if you go back to September of 2011 and replays there, I've got that document right there, I think, on the replays of my recovering from surgery. But let me just make sure I put it, send it out there.
Okay. Real
quick. Yeah. So great. Well, any other questions or other things? Fantastic, with Amy. I'm so glad you shared all that. You're really moving along here.
Well, I'm hoping this thing would be really cool. The music school would be really interesting. But
yeah,
we'll
all that would be. Yeah, I was working with that harpist I mentioned a little while back, too. Sometimes they get, and you can combine the two. Oftentimes musicians get injured from their, you know.
Oh, right, that's true. I didn't think of that.
Yeah.
About the injury parts of.
Yeah, that harpist I worked with had a torn shoulder from playing her harp, and so she had to quit playing for a while, and then was having to get back into it, regain her confidence, and all working with her with that. So, so that's good. So next time we can talk too about just media opportunities too. I wanted to tell you about working with NBC and in the Olympics and all, and how. If sometimes you can reach out to the media for various Olympics or any kind of sports events that are coming up, and they like the local TV channel and tell them you have a perspective on what's going on, like the Super Bowl is coming up end of the month, and you might have an idea about that, some ideas how. What the teams need to do to be able to recover quickly from mistakes and that kind of thing, and you can you might be able to get on TV or radio, and then you can put that on your put the recording on your website kind of thing on YouTube, and that really helps too. So the key is questions, kind of what kinds of questions you come up with what you send them. That can make all the difference in actually getting the gig or getting them to interview you for the media. So we can talk about those questions next time. So, this is great.
Thank you. I'm way overdue, but it was worth staying online. It was very helpful. Thank you.
All right.
Oh, thanks,
Sue.
Yeah, thank
okay,
you.
We'll talk to everybody on the 23rd.
Yes.
Okay.
Thanks.
Thank you.
Again. Bye-bye.
Thanks again. Okay, we'll talk to you soon, everyone. Have a great new year.
Bye-bye.
Thanks,
bye-bye.
Dr. Joanne.
Yeah, congratulations.
Thank you.
Okay, bye now.
Okay, bye.